Monster Man, Episode 490, Giant Kama Zakarin, and Hama. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through the Arabian Nights-inspired fantasy of Al-Qadim, the setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Before we do that, a quick reminder, the Guide to Grunts is now available in both digital and physical form. You can find digital copies on my Itch page, james-holloway.itch.io, or you can order a physical copy if you're in the US from Exalted Funeral, and they're not up on the Square Hex website yet, but Square Hex do have physical copies in the UK. All right, let's take a look at our first monster, the Giant Kama Zakarin. There's two small inaccuracies in terms of what I've said here. First, this isn't a monster, it's three monsters, the desert, reef, and jungle giants. And also, we're not really going to look at them because we already have. These are three new kinds of giants, but they are not new to us since we already covered them in the Monstrous Manual season. So that was in episodes 404 and 405 if you want to go back and listen to them. There are two differences between the Zakarin giants that appear in the Monsters Manual and the Zakarin giants that appear here. The first is that they have different illustrations. I would say that maybe like the modal standard of art in the Al-Qadim Monstrous Compendium Appendix is better than the Monsters Manual, although obviously the highest values of the Monsters Manual are better since they're by Tony Terlizzi, which I think may have been among his first gaming work. Just that's something that cropped up in Ben Riggs's book. Anyway, whatever. These are less like figure against a blank background. It's black and white, of course, and it tends to have fewer female characters, and I wouldn't say that it's all effective. The jungle giant, for instance, looks like the front man of a faded hair metal act trashing his dressing room at the state fair. But the other big difference is that we get a page-long introduction to Zakarin giants as a whole. Now, we've seen previously in Monstrous Manual, particularly for Ravenloft, monsters that referred back to one of these like intro pages, only that page didn't appear in Monstrous Manual. And you really get a very different context if you've read this. So we learn that Zakarin giants are not very like the giants of other parts of the world. The sort of classic Monster Manual giants range from dumb, brutish hill giants to refined and civilized, but still, you know, tyrannical and warlike storm and cloud giants. These guys are neutral aligned, they're very civilized, and they're mostly loners. Apparently reef giants are even more alone than the loners. And they're very wedded to tradition and protocol. So, you know, maybe a giant is something you want, or you have to cross its territory, and the thing you need to do to get past them is to make sure that you don't offend them while you drink tea together. They write poetry, they write history, and non-giants really prize their writing because giants, being, you know, so long-lived, have a unique perspective. They used to be like the rulers of this region, and now they're kind of faded remnants of that. There were giants in the earth in those days, I guess. So what we have here is another non-presumptively combat-focused Al-Qadim monster. You know, the more I read this book, the more interested I am in the imagined Al-Qadim game, and the more curious I am about how that actually worked out in practice. Because this is, once again, a creature that you aren't particularly going to fight. Or at least, it's not that you can't fight it. You can fight it for the reason that you would fight any person. You can fight it because it has something you want. You can fight it because you have something it wants. You can fight it because it killed your cousin or because you killed its cousin. You can fight it for any number of personal or political or strategic reasons. But it doesn't carry with it the presumption that you're going to be fighting it. Like, take orcs, for instance. Now, orcs have often been criticized for portraying a race as, in and of itself, evil. And, you know, I think that is a problem with the way that the alignment system is presented in D&D, certainly. But even if we leave aside that idea, it doesn't matter what alignment something is if, when you encounter it, it is marauding. And that is what orcs are kind of presumptively doing, right? Their whole description, the whole thing, is based around the idea that they are marauding. They're the equivalent of, like, Vikings. That Viking might be a pretty chill guy. He might be true neutral, but it doesn't matter because he is currently attempting to burn down your village, so you're going to fight him. And I don't think many people would be too concerned about the morality of that. Or, you know, maybe, but they would understand that that violence was justifiable. And that is the case with most post-1980 D&D orcs. That when you encounter them, regardless of what their alignment is, they are engaged in some violent activity that you need to stop. And that is true whether you keep them as orcs or whether you take out orcs and just call them Vikings. But the same is not true of the Zakarin Giant. There's no reason that they couldn't fight you, but they don't come equipped with a desire to fight you. I'm kind of into this, honestly. Or at least into the imagined version of it that I'm envisioning. It feels to me like, actually in many ways, a positive outgrowth of Gygaxian naturalism. So we saw in the Monstrous Manual this very dry naturalistic approach to monsters. But the problem was that there was this naturalistic approach to monsters which were designed for dramatic effect in the first place. Or not dramatic effect, but maybe even just like threat. So you can't take something that doesn't make sense in the first place and then apply that kind of logic to it. The orc as senseless brute that only knows how to fight doesn't merit that kind of like science fictional engagement with its natural quality, since it's so unnatural on its face. But here, the Al-Qadim book takes this kind of like sociological approach to so many of its monsters, but that works because they are not just lurking in caverns to fight people. I don't know if I'd be into the actual setting as presented, but it's a weird magical landscape full of weird magical creatures. And a lot of the time what you have to do is research them in order to do effective diplomacy. That's kind of my thing. Okay, from the Giants, Zakarin, we move on to the Hama. We have briefly mentioned the Hama, I think, back when we talked about the Amut, because Amut devours souls, and the Hama is a soul, basically. It's a bird that manifests from the soul of a dead person. Normally, it just flies off from the body to the afterlife, but under certain circumstances, it can be stuck in the prime material plane. And that's often because it wants, you know, a kind of traditional ghost thing, like it wants to bring its killer to justice, for example. But there are other possibilities, just as with any kind of ghost story. If a party assists a Hama, they may receive a kind of blessing in return. I think that the Hama is named after another legendary bird, and that is the Homa or Homa, which is a mythical bird from Persian literature and fable. And because of the sort of broad influence of Persian culture, you also get stories of this bird in India and in the Arab world. It isn't, as far as I know, the soul of a dead person. It's just a magical bird, which is often said to fly so high above the earth that it never touches the ground. And because of this, it's very rare, and seeing it and having its shadow fall on you is considered to be good luck, which I think is a pretty cool image. In some versions, particularly in like Mughal India, having its shadow fall on you means that you're going to be the king, and kings wore feathers in their turbans that were said to come from the Homa bird. It has been identified with the griffin vulture, also with like the griffin, because if you look at these ancient Persian monuments of griffins, you know, they have bird-like heads, and apparently people look at them and go, oh, that's the Homa bird. I'm not saying they were built to be the Homa bird, but that's kind of the name that is given to them because of how they look today, or, you know, in the modern era. I guess the Homa and the Hama aren't that similar other than being magical birds, but it feels like there's a connection there, if only because of the similarity of the names. This seems good to me. A lot of magic birds in Islamic literature, and this is, you know, more of a quest-giving monster than one that you would necessarily want to fight. Indeed, given that it's largely ethereal, it'd be pretty tricky if you did want to. But no, I think this works. I think that this is a fun and appealing creature. It's more of a story than it is a monster, really, but that's also okay. It's very atmospheric. It's just, again, it just feels more Al-Qadimi than just finding a ghost. Because it doesn't communicate with you in the same way that a ghost might. So you're traveling on a lonely road and you see this shining bird perched on a tree by the roadside, and it leads you to where the murder happened. And then you say, ah, that bird must have been the Hama of the victim. That feels very in character. See, I don't know that much about Arabic or Persian, you know, Islamic literature and folklore. Like, I know a little bit. I've done some reading, but not the most reading in the world. And I do think that Al-Qadim is hitting me kind of on my level, which is to say, I couldn't tell you, like, I haven't read every story in the Arabian Nights. I couldn't tell you whether that is like a common motif. Traveler on a Lonely Road at Night has a magical encounter of some kind. It's certainly something that happens in folklore from other parts of the world. It makes sense that it'd be in the Arabian Nights, but I couldn't actually tell you. But it sort of fits with my casual preconception of what the vibe is like, and I think that that's very much what this setting is going for. All right, that's about all the time that we have for today. In our next episode, we're going to be continuing our journey through the monsters of Al-Qadim, and we're going to take a look at the Hewe and the Living Idol. So I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram @MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.